Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of The Trap Draw. Before we get to Big Randy and today's guest, just want to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Mizzen and Main. Again, visit mizzenandmain.com. We'll have a little bit more to say about them later in the show.
Max is the spot for that Trap Draw.
And Ziploc that right on my waistline is why I kept that strap. Yeah. I remember nights, I didn't remember nights. Nice. I damn near went crazy, I had to get it right. Now I'm your favorite rapper's favorite rapper. Hey, now I'm your favorite trapper's favorite trapper. The absolute truth, yeah, no joke. Who me? I emerged from the crack.
All right. Thanks, Mr. Jeezy. Another excellent intro. I got to admit, a little disappointed not hearing Tron's mom there at the beginning. But Tron, how are you, man?
I'm good. It's too hot down here in Florida. But
man, it's really the dog days, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm researching next year how we can get the hell out of here for July and August.
Well, you had started to grow your hair out, too. And how long did that last? Like 3 days?
3 days. The beard got a lot longer. And then... yeah, I figured this is not a good idea.
You had the harshest goatee going. Or, not goatee, mustache.
Fu Manchu.
Like a handle, but yeah, Fu Manchu. Yeah. God.
And then, and then Alex threatened to divorce me if I kept that around. So.
All right, well, enough about that. Our guest today is Tyler McCumber. Tyler is currently on a crazy heater up in Canada.
Possibly the hottest player in the world right now.
Yeah, you know, no hyperbole there. He's got a couple weeks off here between his next start and was kind enough joining us in person today. So, Tyler, welcome to the Kill House. Good to have you.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's an honor to be here.
Yeah.
We've been trying to make this thing happen for a few weeks. We were going to do it, I think 3 weeks ago after you won for the first time. And then we're like, all right, we'll do it next week. And then you won again. And then
I think we've exchanged more texts than I have with anyone else.
It's crazy. And I feel bad. I feel like I've been hassled.
No. It's all good.
Well, I was going to say, Tron, do you want to kind of give the people, we say he's the hottest player in the world.
Yeah.
You want to add some context here?
Yeah, just going through the results here. I'm sure a lot of our audience, our audience on the Trap Draw here is probably the more diehard of the NLU franchises. It's kind of like, hey, once you start listening to LU, then you go to the next level and you start listening to Trap Draw. So I'm sure most of our audience is very familiar with the McKenzie Tour. But you kind of started off your year, made five cuts in a row, didn't really have any spectacular finishes, couple tied for 10s. And then July 22nd, 2018, starting there, you've been burning it down since then. Won the Osprey Valley Open, 65, 61, 65, 72. The next tournament out there, the Syncrude Oil Country Championship. First place there, 67, 68, 65, 63.
Which I got to say is played at the Edmonton Petroleum Golf and Country Club, which special shout out. That's sweet.
And then, a little bit of an off week the following week at the ATV Financial Classic. Solo third, 63, 66, 65, 68, and then got it back on the rails this week at the Players Cup, which is that's in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
For a 69, 65, 65, 67 for another win. So, you've made $135,000 on the McKenzie Tour this year with
Canadian
or Canadian. Yeah. Oh, Canadian. Okay. Yeah. But still with that's tough to do to get into six figures. Up there.
Yeah, no, it's been a good run. Obviously getting some momentum going and feeling good about my game for a while. But it's nice in the last few weeks to capitalize because sometimes you play good and you don't win, But definitely been sort of capitalizing on good play. So
let's take it all the way back, I guess. Yeah, we'll start with kind of your – you come from a golfing family. Your dad's somewhat of a legend out there on the PGA Tour. So I guess just take us through your introduction to the game and your, kind of formative years.
And you're local, and you're local here. You grew up in Ponte Vedra, do I have that correct?
Yep, grew up in Marsh Landing, and then we moved over out of Marsh Landing for a few years. And so sort of all my childhood was spent in Ponte Vedra here. But Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, starting from just being around golf, obviously, like you said, from a golfing family, from my dad being a player, and then also them having the course design business, McCumber Golf. Cousin was a player, you know, and then his brothers he went into business with on the course design end. So, you know, from as early as I can remember, there was golf. There were golf people over at the house. Golf talk, obviously, nonstop, as you guys are probably familiar with. But yeah, I mean,
So for anybody who hasn't put two and two together yet, your dad is Mark McCumber,
yeah,
10-time tour winner. Just wanted to connect those dots for any listeners that were unsure. Sorry to interrupt you there.
Oh, no worries. Yeah, so I guess I'll skip over all the boring stuff. But
were you rabid about golf growing up?
Yeah,
I was just gonna kind of get into that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I wasn't. You know, and it wasn't on purpose. I didn't really have a reason. I just kind of figured it was something my dad did, and I didn't really. I guess I wasn't interested in it as much when I was younger. Played other sports. I was big into. I love surfing. You know, my friends kind of gravitated around baseball and the beach and just kind of things that were maybe less of a commitment, but just more fun hanging with the boys. And not until 12, 13 did I kind of take a liking to golf. I do remember this kind of transition in it was I was playing Little League. I mean, we would have been 13 or 12, 13. And I kind of, after one of the games, was talking with my dad. I was like, man, I love baseball. Don't get me wrong, but I just feel a little bored out there, you know? And he was like, well, you're playing catcher, third base.
You're in the middle of the action.
You know, and he's like, I don't think it's going to get any more engaging for you. And I was like, yeah, you're probably right. Like, what should I do? You know, we kind of had a little talk. And he's like, well, come to the golf course with me, you know, and hit a few. And kind of just got into it that way because I felt like golf was a lot of action. You know, it was always mm-hmm. on you. And I still love baseball, but that's kind of when I got into golf.
Okay.
So he didn't really pressure you, or it was something that you really found more or less on your own? I mean, you came to it in your own time.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I've never, even to this day, really had any pressure from my dad to play golf. I think he realizes how hard it is, and he wouldn't really wish that upon anyone. So
had you played even just recreationally before that? Any I mean, did you kind of show a certain talent level, or was it, you know, when was it really like when you were 13, that's kind of when you picked it up and started to play?
I showed zero aptitude for golf. You know, maybe other than just a little bit of hand-eye coordination. I actually, it's funny, like going back and kind of recounting all these memories. I didn't even remember this, but until I was 13, I would go to the range. Like I would hit shots, but I never like worked on my setup or got serious about it. I actually started my golf swing from the top. Never had a backswing. So until 11, 12, I would go with my dad to the range at TPC.
It was like baseball.
It was baseball, yeah. And I guess I didn't do it on purpose. It just was felt normal to have it here and then start because that's the sport I played, I guess. And so I remember fondly being in the back range at TPC and, you know, dad practicing with the other guys that were playing on tour as well. And I was hitting balls from the top. Like
back of the range out there. Yeah. I probably got BJ banging balls on the way.
Ripping them off. And I remember he'd always tease me. He's like, you know, you're hitting them so fast. Like, and he would call me Machine Gun McCumber. He'd be like, you're like a machine gun over there. I just hear, I'm like that. So those are good memories for sure.
So then did it start to click? Did you really fall in love with the game, or was it just another, another thing you did to keep yourself busy during high school?
Yeah, you know, I guess like last year of middle school, I guess it would be seventh, eighth grade is when you're 12, 13. I got playing in tournaments. I remember the first tournament I played, the back to school at Ponte View Drinning Club. It was such a big junior tournament to us. It was like, or it became, you know, when we got older, but I shot 102, 99, my first two rounds. I think I might have missed the cut. I don't know. It was close. But I just was kind of first time ever really playing in a tournament. And I guess I got the bug. I wanted to break 100. Mm-hmm. I did the second time I played. And then I think the next year I shot like 80, 78. And then the next year won the younger age division. So it was like something that I just kind of, I guess I got addicted to the progress of it. Yeah. You know, like, oh, this is kind of cool. Like, I really suck. Let's see if I can get decent at this. You know, there was no aspiration mm-hmm. at the time. It was just like, oh, let's see if I can kind of break 90, break 80, break 70, win a tournament.
And then you started playing golf on the high school team?
Yeah. Yeah. I remember having, you know, kind of conversations with some of my buddies that were at Nice that were playing on the team. I was like, man, like, do you think I'll make the high school team? Like, you know, I don't know. And they're like, yeah, I think you'll be fine. I think you'll keep getting in. And so it kind of just progressed from there. I was like, man, I'd love to make the high school team and I'd love to start. And then we won a state championship and kind of progressed from there.
So from there, were you getting looks from colleges? Like, were you playing well enough? Were you playing in AJGAs or were you playing in any, you know, any junior tournaments kind of nationwide, or were you?
Yeah, I would say, I think 15, 16, I started to get in some events. This was a long time ago now. You know, they have like the whole performance, or they did. I don't know how they run the AJGA anymore, but they had like performance. I think it was stars or ratings mm-hmm. or something to how you qualify. And so I played a few open events, finished like second or third, got in, you know, ended up getting in like the invitationals and the bigger national tournaments like Publinx, Western Juniors, US, you know, qualified for US Junior okay. and stuff like that. And so kind of got into that like 15, 16. 17 and then and played pretty well. I wouldn't say I was on anyone's radar until I won the state junior and then finished like second in the Western junior, and that was like 16, 17 and
okay
or 15, 16, 17, and then I guess I started talking to some local schools in Florida. And then
so tell me about Florida. How'd you get to Florida? Had you always wanted to go to Florida?
University of Florida. Yeah, I mean, my family's kind of diehard Gator fans. My cousin played there. Josh, you know, was an All-American on the team and, you know, good player himself. And my uncle was a Gator, you know, season ticket holder, I think for 30 years or 40 years, like something crazy. So we'd always go to the games. I was a pretty big Gator fan. I knew what the golf program kind of had to offer. Obviously playing for Buddy Alexander is, you know, an awesome privilege with all of his knowledge, and he had a relationship with my dad, and so I knew that that would translate well into developing as a player. You know, mm-hmm. they could communicate and then we could all work together, because at the, you know, time, as I still kind of do, but I was just working really with my dad on my golf game. So yeah, I mean, it was a super fun 4 years. But I was looking at other schools as well. UCF, FSU, sort of all the schools in state, and visited them all, and just kind of ended up picking Florida in the end.
How did your mindset, so it just blows me away, you know, you talked about at the age of 13, kind of shifting from, or beginning the shift at least, from baseball more towards focusing on golf, and then obviously by the time you're 18, you're a Division I scholarship player. At what point, or what was that process like, from where it was, you know, just competitive with yourself, hey, can I break 90, can I break 80, can I break 70, to then, you know, did any thoughts come in like, hey, I can do this at the college level, or, you know, this is something I want to do professionally? Did you even think about that back then?
Yeah, I did. Sort of kind of thinking of the timeline, I do remember a pretty important conversation, or important now, I guess, because we're talking about it, but, you know, at the time, having a conversation with my dad, and I was kind of like, well, you know, do you think I'm good enough to play here? Like, I just didn't know, you know, shooting whatever, 70, 80s, mid-70s, like, is 13, 14, and, you know, he kind of gave me some encouragement. Like, I think if you keep doing these things and spending as much time as you're spending and, you know, sort of have this commitment, I think you're going to, you know, be fine. I think you'll hit, you know, let's see if you can just hit all of the, I guess, milestones would be the word. Like, see if you can kind of see how high school goes, see how college goes. And then I really got addicted to sort of the grind, I would say, when I was about 17, when I realized, like, okay, I'm going to go to Florida, or 16. Because I was like, I'm going to go to Florida. This is something I want to take serious. If I'm going to play a D1 sport at University of Florida, I'm probably going to want to do it professionally, you know, like take advantage of that opportunity to grow and play with good players and have, you know, sort of good coaches. And So I started to go to the gym and wake up early. I remember it. We lived off of 16 at Ponte Vedra Training Club, and I would take my wedges to the 16th hole, that par three. And I loved when they had that back left pin and front left pin, because it's like it's the hole in one pin, man. And I would go there, you know, when it was daylight savings time and you could, you know, when the sun's up early, I would take my shag bag, go chip and putt, and hit shots from the tee. And then I would throw it all in that like wispy grass there, that native grass, and catch the bus. The bus would pick me up right in front of there. Like I asked her if she would, you know, versus picking me up at the house. And so I really, it was fun. Like I was playing with my friends, but that's kind of when it became, not in a negative sense, a job, but like, I really got addicted to getting better. I was like, man, you know, like, can I hit this green 7 out of 10 times from 100 yards? Can I get this up and down? And then I knew the bus was coming, so it was like pressure. I was like, you know, shoot, like I want to do this. And then I think that next year I had her, she started to pick me up from the workout, the gym at Ponte Vedra Club. And she's like, where is it going to be next? Like, you know, like what's going on here? Like, what are you working for? Like, and I was like, I like that aspect of it.
You know? Yeah. I guess during college, did it kind of keep on that same trajectory as far as you just kept steadily improving? Or did you find you kind of plateaued once you got there? Or how did your career go in Gainesville?
Well, the first year I got there, I mean, I kind of struggled being away from home. Even though I was like an hour and a half down the road. I don't know. I just, you know, doing your own, I guess being in charge of all your little day in and day out things, eating, doing laundry. It's just obviously a transition for everyone. You know, I kind of struggled my first year. I had some good rounds, but just couldn't quite get my shit together, so to speak, you know? And then, it took a while for me. And so, you know, I ended up missing out on the postseason, which was, now that I look back on it, I was probably glad, because it was a motivator for me. It was kind of like, well, because I expected to make it, and I wanted to make it, I guess is a better word, not expected. But, and I felt like I'd played, I was capable of playing well enough to be an impact in the postseason, and I, you know, obviously wasn't. And I think that was good. I went home that summer pretty upset. You know, I was like, I'm going to play good in amateur golf, won the Florida, the state am, and played well in the player, the Porter Cup, like some amateur events and Western am and stuff. And it was good for me. It sort of lit a fire, I thought, in me to play and maybe just relook the way I was doing it. From there, I played pretty solid. You know, we won SECs, was an All-American twice. And academic All-American, which I have no idea how that happened. That must have been a fluke. And then was the team captain the last 2 years, which was fun. That was really, I think when people ask me, you know, what's your favorite part about college? And I thought just being with a good group of guys and having them vote me as maybe the team captain meant the most to me. I don't know if I voiced that to them, but like, I don't know, I just felt really cool to know you're around a good group of guys that feed off each other, and they, you know, we all look up to each other, but I was pretty stoked to be part of that.
Mm-hmm. From there, you knew without a doubt you wanted to graduate, turn pro?
Yeah, I remember when I got to school, I had a really good conversation with, Buddy, you know, our coach at the time, sat us all down individually in private, kind of in his office, and we talked about like our plans, like what did we want out of golf. And you know, I told him, he asked me, he's like, what do you want from golf? You know, are you here to study? Are you here to play seriously? And I said, well, I want to play professionally. And he said, well, you know, you seem like a simple guy. I don't know what he meant by that, but I hope he meant that he, you know, let's keep it simple, which is what we did. And he said, I think most easily put, let's make the goal for you to get better every year, every day, you know, pretty much. Mm-hmm. As long as you're getting incrementally better, because I wasn't, you know, a stud going into school by any means, like at all. And I think with the goal, like simplifying it, saying, hey, let's get better every day, let's tighten it up day in and day out and never backtrack, was a way where he assured me that if you do that, you'll be where you want to be. You know, mid university career, you know, and especially when you leave here, you'll be ready to play professionally. And and it was really, I think it took the pressure off, you know, not trying to just do big things out of the gate, but just shoot certain scores and tighten up parts of my game. And I don't know, it just, it was really good advice from him. So,
from there, you turned pro in 2013 after you graduated, and walk me through kind of that first season, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, when you're fresh out of school, you don't know better. So this game's easy, right? Like it's, you don't know what it means to fail. And so I think Q schools, the whole process seems a bit, it's just, you know, you're kind of blindly going into the experience, and you'll see a lot of guys get on tour young, and a lot of guys get through Q school their first try because
they just don't know any better.
Like they don't know any better. You know, you're just playing golf is what, and that's the goal, you know, is to just do that. And so I made it to finals at Q school my first year, got Webb conditional, didn't have a good showing at finals. So I wasn't getting in events on my number right off the bat, and they had just started, I don't know if the PGA Tour acquired the Latin and Canadian that year, or maybe the year before, how that worked, but there were 10 web spots to go play in Latin America.
Okay.
So I went down there not really knowing what I was getting into, and played the first event. I think I missed, or I made the cut and somehow reshuffled, ended up playing an entire season down there, and finished third on the money list, which got me my web card back for the following year.
And during that, I mean, you, like, it sounds like that was kind of a little diversion there. Like, at what point were you like, wait, like, I'm playing golf in Ecuador and Peru and Chile and Argentina? Like,
no, I mean, absolutely. No, that's exactly what I was thinking. You know, and I think I didn't really know what to expect or how well you had to play. Like, I didn't know. I was just kind of down there playing golf.
Just flying
and I
think blind.
That that's kind of that. It goes back to what I was saying about Q school. You're just down there playing golf, not thinking about anything else. And that's, it's a good bubble to be in, you know, and fortunately played pretty well and had, two wins down there. And came shy on the last round of the Argentine Open of, winning the money list. So
okay. Which ones did you win?
I won in Ecuador was my first win. And then Mazatlan was my second win. I went win, miss, cut, win.
Okay.
And then, you know, continued to kind of ride that momentum and confidence throughout the rest of the season, had, you know, some more top five finishes and whatever squeezed in there. And so that pretty much guaranteed the first, like a full start on web that following year, you're in like the first seven events.
What's so. The craziest story you have from playing down there?
The craziest story from playing.
Like we had Justin Huber and Luke Guthrie on, and Huber was telling a story about, I think it was Kent Bull was like in a, he ended up taking a dump outside.
You know, like it was just, oh yeah, what happens thing. In South America yeah. stays in South yeah. America, especially outside dumps. That would be for sure. I mean, shoot, it's South America, so it's anything can happen at any time, you know. And I mean, I will say, I feel like I was fortunate to be in the situation where I kind of crave adventure. I love to travel. I'm not afraid of like an alternative lifestyle. You know, I'll go, you know, hiking in the mountains for a couple of weeks by myself and like camping. And so I'm fine with being away from home and kind of being in situations. I'm not, you know, I wouldn't call myself a prima donna by any means. And I think that
you're
helps.
Street smart.
You know, yeah. That. Like I don't mind staying in kind of a dumpy hotel, or if a situation arises like that, it's just not a big deal to me.
You probably like the surfing down there too, right?
I love the surfing. And actually, that was kind of my goal, was to network in all these coastal regions where I could had a, I had a place to go back down and kind of have a free place to stay on a surf trip. So yeah. Like Lima, Peru, and Argentina, Brazil. There's all incredible surf in those countries. So
have you taken advantage of that since
then? I have. Yeah, I guess I went to – where did I go? I went back down – I have a buddy in Costa Rica who runs a surf camp. A couple of buddies actually in Costa Rica that run surf camps in Tamarindo.
Okay.
It's Turf Safari, Robert Twine. He has a spot down there. So I've gone down a few times other than when the tournaments are there to play. I've gone to, I'm good friends with the Salim family in Peru. And I've gone down there to surf and go to Machu Picchu, which was fun. And gone back to Brazil to surf as well, but I didn't make any connections there. And but Central America has always been a good surf destination, so
okay.
I'll hop down there quite a bit.
I'm told by like Matty Kelly, who's been on the pod before. He tells me his sister-in-law, his father-in-law, all of them, and then Johnny Thompson from Callaway, they're all like, yeah, Tyler can absolutely rip. He's a very good surfer.
That's a stretch. That's very nice of them. I mean, I've been surfing longer than I've played any other sport. Yeah. When I was six, I remember I had a babysitter, and she was older, and Miss Pat, actually, and we're still good friends to this day, and she was a big kind of local Jack's Beach girl, I guess, growing up, you know, and she took me out with a boogie board that had fins on it. So I don't know how she did it, but she pretty much just put together this boogie board with fins, and I learned to surf on that, standing up on a boogie board, no wax, nothing. And with the fins, it would kind of hold its line, so you could go straight and not slide out, and you could even kind of learn to go down the line, like of the wave, and like sort of hold edge on the face with the fins. And so that's how I got into it, and it was pretty much like right when I was riding a bike, like, you know, running and walking good. So it was like, I was in the water early.
I was shocked when I moved down here just how strong the surf culture is. I mean, it's crazy. And then like we watched that Under the Arctic Sky documentary on Netflix.
Oh, that's good.
Justin Quintal.
Oh, that's a great one.
Yeah. And you realize you're like, man, there's world-class surfers here. So
no, it's definitely, you know, it sort of has that golf surf connection here. And I think that's why, you know, growing up here has been so fun, because those are my two passions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have world-class golf courses and world-class golfers that live here. And then you have just a great community of surfers, and the surf culture, which as you've said, is really big here. So it's definitely been fun to grow up in that and be a part of it.
Are you a big Endless Summer guy?
I do like Endless Summer. I like the movie. I'll watch any surf footage you give me. That's what I do in the hotel room at night. Like I either am reading books or I'm watching YouTube videos of different places I want to go surf, and just watching guys I love that rip. And it's kind of my way to get inspired without watching golf. You know, I watch John Florence and Slater and Fanning and Irons, you know, videos of them just ripping. And I'm just kind of, it's a way for me to get inspired, but not from golf.
Yeah. Did you read Barbarian Days, Tron?
Yeah.
That's,
you read that? I read it. So good.
I just picked it up too. I'm not a surfer at all. In fact, I go out and fool around on a little stand-up paddleboards about the extent of it. But just being down here,
seeing his like 9 foot tall ass on a stand-up paddleboard is great.
But the culture just fascinates me. I love it. I love the vibe. And so I watched Endless Summer actually earlier this year, and it was like, whoa, that's
pretty neat.
Yeah, so cool.
It's kind of inspired us on how we do our video stuff and all that. But actually, DJ's gotten me into Surfer's Journal too. DJ and Travis Hill, who lives here.
Oh, nice.
And I started reading that, and I'm like, man, there's a lot of parallels between the two sports, between golf and surfing, and I think the communities.
Yeah.
Around
the absolutely.
Sports.
I mean, you have a lot of surf. I think it helps too, because a lot of surfers love to golf. What I've been told, they'll post photos of themselves. Like, and I think even some of them have gotten in with Callaway and kind of like repping their gear and photos and stuff. And
Chad, I played with like Evan Geiselman a couple months ago.
Yeah, that's who I was thinking of. I was just drawing a blank on his name. But there are. And I think it does help that there are a lot of surfers that golf. Kelly's a good golfer himself, plays in the Pebble Beach Pro-Am every year. I wouldn't say there's a ton of golfers that surf, but or no golfers that surf. But there's a few. Brad Gale's one of them, which I think you guys have caught up with him or know him maybe.
Yeah.
Robert Twine, my buddy who's down in Costa, he's a good golfer. He plays in that Essential Costa Rica Open on the Latin Tour, and he's an unbelievable longboarder and surfer. And then a lot of my friends here, Jay Dotson, Billy Eckert lives in Hawaii now. They're all Jack's locals, and they love to get out on the links. That's like the first thing they want to do. They're like, when are you playing? And should I play here? And so it's cool to see that connection. I like it because I feel like they balance each other out, you know, physically, mentally. They go well together.
You've probably got good core strength too, right? From surfing?
Just from surfing, yeah. Yeah, probably. I'd say it's I'd say for me, it's more of a posture deal. Like, it's golf is so hunched and kind of introverted with your chest. You know, like
almost the opposite.
And surfing gets you. Gets now that I'm thinking about it, it's kind of it gets your shoulders back and up and kind of more open. So physically, I feel like they do balance each other out. Yeah, and it's good for your balance too. Like, in general.
Does your dad surf?
He doesn't. Funny story about that, actually. I took him out one time. He was like, I got to know what's the attraction to this? Like, how much fun are you having when you go out there? Like, I got to feel that. I took him out. It was behind our old house, and it was an old, it used to be a really good surf spot. The sand shifts, as you guys know, around here with the storms. And we used to call it the Sticks. It's the county line. It separates pretty much Jack's Beach from Ponte Vedra. And, there was a really fun high tide break there for a long time. So all my buddies would come and surf it and park in our driveway. And, he asked me to take him out, and I took him on a longboard, and first wave, we weren't out for 5 minutes, and he's on it. He's kind of, he doesn't know, you know, it just doesn't come natural. It's like, it's a weird deal if you've never been. And he somehow kind of like is that the word, plumb bobs? Like when you put something in the water and it shoots, maybe that's
just like very stationary.
Yeah,
and
he kind of gets on the board and it gets down and it shoots, like he lets go of it and it shoots up. Nails my nose and I start bleeding everywhere. And to this day, he's never been in the water with me again. And every time someone asks him, do you surf? He's like, nah. The one time I went, I pretty much broke my son's nose. So,
does he fish?
He does, yeah.
Okay, I was going to say, it's like it seems like down here you either surf or you fish. Yeah,
he's pick fishing. Yeah. I think it's a little safer bet for him, a little calmer. Yeah.
All right, quick break to pay the bills here. Tron, tell the people about Mizzen and Main shirts.
Well, I didn't know Neil had been wearing these for years and years and years. I noticed his pit stains had gotten better, but I really didn't know how. But I was first introduced to him this year, really when Phil Mickelson started wearing them.
Yeah.
And I wore them kind of unwittingly at first for the BMW Charity Pro-Am and ended up quite liking it, and I just wore it for the rest of the event too. So extremely comfortable four-way stretch, moisture wicking. It was very hot and humid in Greenville, South Carolina in May. But yeah, so I would encourage all you guys to get involved. It's you can wear on or off course. I would probably recommend off course. I think that's something that people don't really understand, is that the golf thing is just kind of a little it's almost a little joke of theirs. They're like, hey, they're so comfortable you can wear them playing golf, but you know, it's not really what they're purpose built for. So mizzenandmain.com, use the promo code TRAPDRAW, all caps, one word, TRAPDRAW, for $10 off your order, and get involved. I think they've got some new fall stuff hitting the shelves. So mizzenandmain.com.
All right, now back to our interview with Tyler McCumber.
So after that season, you got some guaranteed web status.
Yep.
Heading in, this is going into 2015.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, 2015.
So then, how'd that season go for you?
It started off well. You know, obviously, you have to make a check in the first two reshuffles. Mm-hmm. When you're, you know, having those starts to continue playing throughout the year. I finished fifth in, I think, solo fifth in Colombia.
Okay.
So you know, it gave me a good amount of money to keep reshuffling no matter how I played for the rest of the year. You know, was in like the 25 deal for the first half of the season, and then sort of went down. I think I got my own way, and just didn't play good golf. You know, head wasn't in the right place.
You start thinking about stuff and you start,
you know, looking back on it, I've learned a ton. I just didn't do it right. You know, I wasn't, I guess you could say, maybe mature or whatever word you want to label it as, but I didn't do it right. You know, looking back on it now, I'm happy that it happened that way, because I feel like I've become a better player because of it. But I just pretty much lost my head. Played terrible, missed like I think 9 cuts or something from there on out, and ended up coming down to the final event in Pumpkin Ridge and just didn't even go into that with the right mindset. Missed the cut, got past, I think I was like 78th or something going into that, got passed by a ton of guys, and ended up having to go back, finish 90th on the money list. Went back to second the following year, kind of rode that just crap mentality and missed in second, and was just, you know, pretty pretty bummed at that progression of how I didn't really do it the right way. It kind of made me rethink things, similar to that scenario where I missed out on the postseason my freshman year at Florida. And
are you doubting your path at this point? Are you thinking about, you know, other options besides golf? Or are you still totally committed to golf?
I think I didn't think of any other options career-wise other than golf at the time. I just sort of went into other mindsets like, oh, is this what I want to do? Is it, you know, like stuff like that where you're just letting any miscellaneous thought roll through and not really staying focused or concentrated at all. And so the following year, I think I tried to stay in the States on Monday and try to get back in because I had conditional status. You're guaranteed conditional status by finishing, okay. I believe, 90. That summer, so it would have been summer 16, I tore, that's when I had started to have my shoulder injury. I tore my labrum. Mm-hmm. And it was a micro tear, so it was somewhat manageable with rehab and stuff. And I tried to play through it, but it was just, it hurt a ton. I'd play an event, have to take 3 weeks off, play an event. It was just impossible to get momentum. I couldn't work out. And then I had the surgery.
Okay.
And like beginning of 17. And then that put me out for a while. And so that's sort of been the evolution of how I've been playing. I did play Canada that year when I was hurt and finished 11th on the money list by, you know, very small amount of money, which would have got you back to finals. And once I kind of missed that momentum mark, I was like, I'm going to have to get the surgery and just kind of recharge and reset.
How do you decide between playing Canada or Latin America? Or, I mean,
well, they're
both
opposite
kind of,
times.
You can kind of do both too, right?
Yeah, you can. I sort of liked the idea of playing Mondays for Webb with conditional status, trying to get in, make a check, get some momentum that way. And then if you don't, you have Canada in the summer. I think that's why I picked Canada. I just kind of never really put multiple events and seasons together when I was injured / right after I got that surgery. I played well. I won in Peru in 16, finished second a few times in Canada, but just never could quite put it together. And not until this year, did I, you know, sort of felt like I was able, or at least sack up and do it to get some momentum and, okay, I'm healthy now. There's no aches and pains. I can work out every day. Mm-hmm. I can kind of get the ball rolling in the direction that I feel like I need to, you know?
And just looking at it too, I mean, it looks like you played a PGA Tour event in March down in the DR. You finished T19 there.
Yeah.
So that's like a nice springboard.
No, definitely. I had I felt like personally that was a good stepping stone for me. I went to Australia this winter.
I saw that you played in the Vic Open and the...
I did. it's kind of a big story of why I went over there, but I was pretty frustrated going into the kind of the end of that fall. That's when I think I first started to kind of let my mind wander, like, man, you know, is there something else I can do and just be better at it, you know, like anything. And I went to Australia, you know, pretty much putting the clubs up. And if something popped up over there that was better, I was going to probably do it. Just travel a bit. I love to travel and, just crave adventure. But, I went over there without my clubs and was just staying in hostels and traveling around, seeing Australia. I have a lot of Australian buddies and, you know, they always talk it up. So I want to see what the hype is all about. And, my agent at the time, well, he's still my agent, called me up. And told me about the Q School, the Muna at Muna Links for the Australasian Tour. And long story short, I ended up getting my clubs over to Australia, playing that, having not touched a club in 3 months and making it through. And got in the Vic Open, got in the first New Zealand event, and kind of got the bug again and was like, man, you know. But the biggest transition over there for me I stayed with a friend of a friend. His name's Moose, Brett Stevens, and he's a former Aussie Rules football player And he's a good friend of a lot of the Australians that I know that are okay. up there, because he's big, you know, big in the sports world, and was Pete Sampras's trainer, mindset trainer when he was number one in the world. So I stayed. He was so nice. I remember he called me up. He's like, "Hey, Mike, you know, like, you want to get a coffee?" I'm like, "Yeah, like, let's get a coffee." Yeah, sure. I love coffee. I love your accent. No. So we went and met for a coffee, and I think he had like a pre-screening to, this guy's on edge, like, don't push him to play golf kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he didn't at all. He was like, let's go for a surf. Like, I'll take you to a few good spots and we'll just, you know, kind of just shoot the shit, you know, and which was what we did. And him and his wife, Cara Black, who's a really, really good tennis player herself, multiple grand winner of Wimbledon in doubles. And they let me stay in their guest house. And I stayed there for, I overstayed my welcome. I was like a couple months. Playing those events, hanging out, surfing, training with him.
Yeah.
And he really got me, kind of just hardened me up a little. I'd say I got a little soft and sort of that victim mindset, which just is terrible. Got you out of your comfort zone. Yeah, it got me out of my comfort zone, toughened me up a little bit. I was like, hey, like, do you want to challenge yourself? Like, do you want life to just be easy? Like, what do you really want out of this? And I think that that transition in mindset, which I talk to him, you know, pretty much every day since, that transition in mindset mixed with, obviously, very fortunate to have the resources of working with Rick Smith and my dad and other tour players, you know, get to play with, playing on good courses. It really is kind of what sort of helped me get in that good zone this year, you know, and sort of. So I, even though the results hadn't come, I could see it trending in regard. I didn't see that what I've done the last couple of weeks trending, obviously, but like good play was there. It was coming, and I just staying patient. And that tour event, getting in that tour event was a huge boost for me.
Was that a Monday? Or was
it was, I Mondayed in and then was in the final group on Sunday.
Okay.
And it was my first event on the tour. So even though it was a backup event to, or a third event to the
WGC.
Was it, did they, yeah, that yeah. It was one of those, yeah. You know, like a John Deere kind of deal. It was, you know, it was obviously a great field, great players. But I really felt comfortable there.
Mm-hmm.
It was weird. I never would have expected of how I would have experienced it, but it felt kind of like you're here on this stage, even though I didn't have status. So the pressure was off. You could just play golf versus, man, I have,
feel it's like
I have
you were playing play. With house yeah. money at that point.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. You know, you're like, man, I've gone through the Monday. I'm here. I, you know, there's no real fail here. Like, I just, you know, go play golf, and you know, and there. So I don't know what aspect it was. I think sometimes at the lower levels, I personally and other guys put a lot of pressure to play good every week because you feel like, man, I kind of do have to play good a lot to
and
get.
And there's such limited spots to advance to the next tour. You know, from Latin America or Mackenzie. It's interesting listening to you talk about it, because you just got, like, you've had success pretty much every year, it seems like. You just couldn't get the momentum going, you know, whether it be injury or whatever. So going up to Canada this year, like, what, the game was just feeling good going in, you're in a good mental place going in, but, you know, at what point, like, what's the secret? I guess
secret. What? Oh, everyone's been texting me that.
Did you feel?
Wish I knew what the secret was.
Have you felt like you're like in the zone? I know that's kind of a sports cliche, but did it feel different, or is it just kind of business as usual, but with maybe a better mindset and, you know, obviously you're healthy too.
Well, you know, I've just been putting first things first and really going through the process. No, I won't give you the cliche answer. Let me think here. I do think that mentally I've gotten stronger. Not that I was really weak, but there was definitely room for improvement. In regards to the zone, I mean, I would definitely say that I feel like I'm in a zone now. But regards to, not in a zone that, oh, this is going to end kind of zone. Like, oh, I'm just going to ride it. It does, I do feel like a more rounded player. And I think that that's kind of, it's kind of been the progression where I kind of had to really look in and see, okay, what are my weaknesses? You know, I love driving the ball. I don't need to go to the range and hit drivers all day. You know, like I think it's hard to work on your weaknesses in everything, in life, in golf, whatever. And so I had to kind of sit down and be like, man, you know, I need to get better at this. I need to get better at this. And it's going to suck working on it, but that's going to be the difference. And so I kind of had to trust that if I put in the work and work on those, that it'll come around. You might not know when. It might be lightning in a bottle, which is kind of how it's been the last few weeks. It might be a slow progression, a fast, you don't know. And that's kind of, I think that's kind of how it's transpired in this year, where I knew it was coming, you know, and you have your normal doubts. I'd call Moose, my dad, I'd be like, oh man, like I played so good this week, but I just didn't get it, you know? And they're like, well, just stay there. It'll happen. I'm like, well, Peter Pan's lost his shadow. You know? I actually said that. He references that all the time and he laughs. But yeah, I would say that coming into these last few events, it's really come together, but it wasn't random. It was definitely sort of,
It was building.
It was building.
Yeah.
Was there a big difference between the first win and the second win? Like the first one, it seemed like it was, you shoot 61 in the second round, and then from there, you're just trying to hang on for dear life.
It was. I will say in regards to the numbers, like the 61 and getting into the 20 unders, if that's the way you say that, is also sort of been big for me and somewhat new. You know, I mean, I'd shot 18 under to win Peru something like that. But not regularly shooting in the 20, you know, getting to 20 under plus or minus, I guess.
Just psychologically, that's got to be.
Well, I think it was neat how that worked, because I remember talking to my dad, like, man, I'd love to go, you know, be able to go lower more often, you know, like And I think it's, you know, it just boils down to a mindset, you know, obviously playing good helps, but like you can't go low without a good mind and being able to freewheel it, so to speak. And when I made the turn, I went low the final round of Thunder Bay. I shot 64 to backdoor top 10 the week before Osprey Valley, which I felt like was really big for me, because it was kind of the pressure was on to have a good event. The course really fit me. And I let loose in the final round, which is kind of the hardest day to kind of let loose, you know. And Osprey Valley, I played well the first day, and then the second day just started making birdie after birdie, was hitting it good, feeling good, and made the turn, I think shooting 30. And then I got off to a hot start on the back nine. And I think in the past, maybe like, oh, let's shoot 6 or 7. I was just like, nah, like let's, you know, I think that the mindset that's holding me back is let's shoot 13 under or 15, like let's shoot 57, you know, like what's holding you back from, why can't you do it, you know?
And you're aware of where you, like how far under you are, like are you a scoreboard watcher too, or do you?
I do. I don't have anything against watching scoreboards personally, and I mean, anyone who doesn't know how many under there are is probably lying to you.
Okay. I've always wondered, like, is that really possible to take it one shot?
They're trying to act too cool if they're saying that. No, there is a flow or zone you can get in where you don't know exactly, but you know, I think when you get to that, you scorecard check and be like, okay, there is a chance of shooting 59 here. And I think what was big was I kind of had that epiphany of like, hey, you know, you need to go for broke when you're playing golf. That's kind of how everyone's doing it. Like the level of play and the style of play has changed in the last 5 years, even last 3 years. Like guys
can't
are
think
shooting.
About the downside. You just have to.
No, you can't play to the fat of the greens and, you know, shoot 4 under and get what you want out of this level of golf, or any level of golf. Like, you know, you have to, you know, apart from the majors, obviously, like, it's a different style of play. But the guys are just aggressive. They're shooting low numbers. Everyone's been in the 20 plus under this year on the McKinsey Tour, and that's, like, never been done in years past. And the level of play is getting better, but it's not like that was last year. My numbers that I'm finishing 15th with were winning. So it's like, what's the difference here? Guys are fearless. You know, they're coming out of school, firing at pins with good short games. It's a good combination, you know, so.
And then as far as the last one, like, you know, you finished third at the ATB Financial Classic and then the Players' Cup. You go there, like, you're just like, all right, I'm winning. Like, has your mindset changed when you show up at all?
I mean, I would say what I'm working on hasn't changed, but it definitely, there is a factor of expectation, or not expectation is kind of always a negative term. It doesn't have to be, but yeah, you do feel, I think when you get in the winning circle and it's repetitive like this, you feel comfortable being up there. Yeah. So,
and you hung out in Banff for a few days and
camping. I went on a tear up in Canada when it comes to wildlife and nature. I ended up not coming back 1 week. I didn't come back to the States for 3 months. So I stayed up there in Whistler for 2 weeks. And then I stayed in Banff for a week and just pretty much
just hiking, did
being like mountain biking, hiking, camping, just exploring and all that stuff.
Did you have your car up there?
I didn't. No, I was renting cars and just kind of sleeping out of my car a little bit and kind of
love that
living the vagabond lifestyle.
What was your favorite spot up there?
I had the most fun in Whistler this year. I stayed at a hostel for 2 weeks. Actually, I thought they were going to start charging me monthly there, but I stayed at. It's an old ski lodge that the UBC, the university built way back in the day where I think they would just go like party there in the woods and just, it was kind of like the no restriction zone, you know, and they turned it into a hostel and I stayed there for 2 weeks and just really networked with all the local. I was lucky. I met a lot of cool people and a lot of people that were generous with their time and sort of resources and, you know, was able to practice a little bit of golf at Nicholas North. Met their staff. They were awesome. And then got in touch with played golf with a guy, John, who owned like a rentals place. So gave me all my bike gear and was able to just kind of fully send it. Like we went up they were taking me on blacks going down the mountain, just doing jumps. I'd never even been on a mountain bike before. Went over the handlebars a few times and just like, I got on the last run and I fell really hard and I was kind of shaking on the way down. They got down, they're like, one more run, then we're going to have some beers. I was like, boys, I'm done. Like this is, there's nothing good coming. Now that I'm scared, nothing good is coming of this. Like, so I just sat there and started having a few pints and met up with them after.
What's your goal for the rest of the season? And then.
Yeah, there's two more events, Montreal and then the Tour Championship, are the last two events of official money. So, I'm just going to, you know, rest up here and sort of practice a little bit, get the game sharp again and go up to Montreal and try to just keep doing what I've been doing.
And then Webb next year.
Yep, that's the goal. Definitely looking forward to getting back there. I think, you know, having to go around in 15 and then playing a few events here and there, you know, I'm really looking forward to getting back there. And with a different mindset and a different sort of angle of attack, so to speak. It sounds kind of lame, but you know, a different way of approaching it. And and I mean, obviously all this has just put it into a lot of perspective for me, you know, and just, you know, how important it is and you know, not to take it for granted and really sort of have that appreciation that you get to play on the web and have a chance to be on the big show. So
cool. Well, good stuff, man. I appreciate you joining us.
Of course, thanks for having
me. We may have to do
like a
non-golf podcast with you too. I know. And just talk about your travels and adventures and all that.
Can you teach me how to surf too?
Yeah, I want to hear about that Barbarian Days as well.
It's
been in my backpack traveling for 3 months and I haven't cracked it open, which is terrible.
It's so well written, like the economy of words in it. And just, there's no wasted prose in there.
What I heard is like, even if you don't like surfing, or it's still a fantastic book.
Yeah.
So
that's good to hear.
Yeah. So. All right.
Good stuff. Yeah. Tyler, thank you.
Thank you guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Max is the spot for that track draw.
And Ziploc that right on my waistline is why I kept that strap. I remember nights, I didn't remember nights. I damn near went crazy, I had to get it right. Now I'm your favorite rapper's favorite rapper. Hey, now I'm your favorite trapper's favorite trapper. The absolute truth, yeah, no joke. Who